If you're still waiting for a sign, here's another one. At California Psychics, we reject 98% of the psychics who apply to work for us. So we only connect you with the best. That's how we can guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And right now, new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. If that's not a sign, I don't know what is. Dramatic sound effect incoming. Experience the joy of certainty at californiapsychics.com.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, indeed, and as promised, Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota is back with us answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you may have. Hi, Julie. Good morning.
Hey, Denny. Any kind of question is up for grabs.
Well, be careful now. We'll probably should limit it to lawns and gardens, I would think. I would hope.
Within that context.
Yeah, unless you want to answer some car repair questions, we could do that.
I don't think so.
All right.
Probably not a good idea.
As you know, Julie, doing the show for so many years, we have questions way ahead of time here. Not that we've thought up, but our listeners have sent text questions in advance of the show. So on that, we always appreciate that, too. But if you have any kind of, like Julie says, any kind of a lawn or garden question, you can call it in if you want to chat with Julie, which is always fun. Or if you want to just send a text, that's good, too. 651-461-9226. What's happening in your garden there at home? Any changes? Now, what would you consider this season like? Enough rain? Not enough? Pretty good?
It's been pretty good. It's been a little bit of rain here and there, sometimes a little more than most people wanted. And my heart goes out to the Texans and the folks in New Mexico. Oh. I just can't even imagine what they're going through.
No.
In the meantime, here in Minnesota, I think we're seeing reduced drought. I know that we just have a little bit of moderate drought, according to Mark Seeley's Weather Talk blog that came out yesterday, up around Kitson County and International Falls area, around that area. There's a little bit of drought, moderate drought still happening, but the rest of the state is actually looking pretty good. And I think down here in south and west central Minnesota, we're actually ahead of the game when it comes to moisture. So that's been beneficial. It takes off some of the pressure off our aquifers and also just the time it takes to water. So that's been awesome. I have been fighting weeds in my backyard.
Don't get me started.
As have many people. And it's important to keep weeding. And I'm kind of going by the rule that if I come home from work and I spend, you know, even a half hour outside weeding, it just helps to reduce that pressure on the plants around it, plus make my garden look a lot nicer. So just a little bit every day. You don't have to go all out, but it's just a little bit does it. So
I'm grabbing a phone call right now. When we come back, though, I want to ask you, well, something we haven't seen on this show, heard from this, like in the years past, are Japanese beetles. We used to get texts all the time, but when we come back, we'll talk about that. But in the meantime, Matt is calling in from Chanhassen this morning. Thanks, Matt. What is your question for Julie?
Hi, Julie. Good morning.
Morning.
Hey, just a follow-up question on the weeding. So I'm noticing some gardens that I don't know if they have 2 to 4 inches of topsoil. It just seems like there's like 0% weeds in their gardens, and that's not the case with my garden. So I'm wondering if, I don't sift through my compost to, you know, get all of the weed seeds out of there, but buying a better compost and maybe adding topsoil next year, or I don't know how these gardens out there, some of them look like they have topsoil on top of their compost, and it just looks wonderful. That's not my garden.
Well, I know that you can help with reducing weeds by putting down a compost over your soil. And that compost actually over time will work its way into the soil. We do this out at the Foodscape at the Arboretum. We've got really heavy clay soil beneath our the topsoil that was brought in when the garden was created. And we want to keep amending our soil to help improve the drainage. But you do need to weed before you put anything over that soil. So don't just lay it over the weeds and think it's going to take care of the weeds at that point, like smother them out or anything. You really do need to do a clean weed and then go ahead and put that topsoil down. And you're going to need to continue weeding. So those gardens that you see have either just been covered with a compost, or they've probably got a really good weeding system going where they're doing it regularly and keeping up on it. But weeds are a problem. They compete with other plants for necessary things like nutrients and space and air and water and also light. And they also can be hosts to insects that can carry viruses like aster yellows, which can destroy asters. And you'll be amazed if you ever look up how many plants are in the aster family that we grow. Even carrots are in the aster family. And these leaf hoppers can carry the virus in their saliva. And as they feed on plants from plant to plant, they can carry that virus. And then that virus it infects the plant that they've fed on. So keeping weeds down, and a lot of our weeds are asters, keeping those weeds down will help to deter some of those viruses as well, and keep those host plants out of your garden.
Good point. Julie, before we go back to the phone, we're getting callers as well as texters. What's the situation about Japanese beetles these days?
So I just found the first Japanese beetles out at the foodscape at the farm at the Arb yesterday. And one of the things I wanted to point out for folks is that on our Japanese beetle webpage on extension.umn.edu, if you go to insects or you just type Japanese beetle into the search box, there's a section called biological control. And biological control is a means by which there's a natural enemy that helps control the population of the pests. Now, Japanese beetles are introduced here, so they're not natural insects here. They're not native insects. So we have discovered, or the University of Minnesota has discovered, along with other people at other universities around the nation, that there is something called a winsome fly, and it's a parasite that lays one or more white eggs on an adult Japanese beetle in the summer. Now, if you look at Japanese beetles along the sides of their body, kind of on their butt end, they have white dots. That's actually fur. That's actually, or hair, that's along that edge. These winsome eggs are going to be on their backs or their heads. And so you want to look at the Japanese beetle before you actually kill it. You want to look at it because it can carry those parasites, those winsome flies. It'll allow those winsome fly eggs that are on its back to hatch out and then infect other Japanese beetles. So that's an important thing to do, and it parasitizes these Japanese beetles. So in other words, we're telling you, if you see the Japanese beetles with the white dots on its head or its back and or its back, don't kill it. Let it feed. It will die soon. So so we want to propagate these or encourage these winsome flies to be out in our natural environment, helping to control Japanese beetles for us.
Wow, how about that? Interesting. I tell you what, time for a quick break. And when we come back, Jay in Coon Rapids is on the phone to ask a question. Then we'll grab some text messages. Our phone number is also our text number, 651-461-9226. This is our Smart Garden Show, brought to us by Great Garage Floors. And welcome back this Saturday morning to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. Julie, down the road, I want to ask you about the abiders, among other things, and as we always like to talk about the Arboretum. But let's grab a couple of phone calls. Rob and Stacy, I think, may be first up here. And then we'll get to Jay in Coon Rapids. Rob, but what is your question for Julie?
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a maple tree. I planted it about 10 years ago. It was probably a 10-foot tall tree at the time. Planted two of them at the exact same time. They're 20 feet apart. I have lots of other maples in my yard, red maple. The one has leafed out like with normal consistency, but the leaves are probably only 50% the size of what they are any other year, or the other maple tree that's the same age 20 feet away. I cannot see any insect damage. I can't figure out any reason why it would be so much more diminutive this year, the leaf size.
Is, Is it healthy otherwise?
It seems like it. I'm just wondering, is there something like if it didn't get enough water, it set its leaves poorly or something like that?
It doesn't have any cracks in its trunk?
Not that I've noticed.
Okay. It could be a couple things. First of all, it may be a different cultivar of maple that was mislabeled. That might be one thing. Small leaves, though, usually represent some kind of lack of nutrition or water, like you mentioned. It could be that the root system is not as developed as your other maple trees, and particularly the one that you planted at the same time. It may be planted a little deeper than the other maple tree, and that could be affecting it too. So you can look at those different things. I think I would probably look at watering it, though we've had quite a bit of water. It may be that that soil where you've planted it is a little bit different from other soil. Maybe it's a little sandier. Maybe it drains a little more, and that maple needs a little bit more attention. It's also good with maples, and you may have already done this, is to mulch any trees too, is to mulch their root zones so that you're not walking on their roots and you're not having to mow up close to the trunk or weed whip around it. It protects the plant, and it also creates a nice protection for the soil. It helps to hold in moisture, helps to cool the roots. And maples in particular do like cooler roots than other plants too sometimes. So I think I would, you know, if it's leafing out and the leaves are just a little smaller, I would give it, you know, just a pass this year. But I would focus on making sure, you know, feel that soil, make sure that the water's getting down 6 to 9 inches. And if you find that you've got a lot of really heavy clay on that plant, you might want to add in a little compost and just allow it to kind of work into that clay soil as well. So those are just some ideas. Worst case scenario, contact a certified arborist and have them come out and assess your trees and give you some advice in that respect. They can check the tree and see it in person.
All right. Very good. I want to grab another phone call. Jay has been waiting there. I do want to mention this texter that wrote in early this morning that they bought some daylilies that were supposed to be deer resistant. However, the deer ate the flowers already.
Yeah.
Are they deer resistant? The question is, and what flowering perennial do you recommend for a shady area?
Oh, flowering. Well, daylilies are not deer resistant. It's actually very hard to find plants that are completely deer resistant because deer will try anything one time. Probably ornamental grasses come to mind as one that deer are less likely to feed on, but they do really love daylily buds. We have a great publication on our site called 30 Plants, the best plants for 30 tough sites. And there's a list there of deer resistant, not immune, but deer resistant plants that you might want to try.
Extension.umn.edu.
You got it.
Say that. It'd be a perfect way to get there. All right, let's grab a phone call. Jay has been waiting there in Coon Rapids. Thanks for the patience, Jay. What is your question for Julie?
Okay, are you hear me?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Good morning. I'm going to be transplanting a hydrangea from getting from a friend, and I probably want to split it. Is it okay to do it now, or should I wait till later in the year, or maybe even next spring? What's the best?
Well, do you know what kind of hydrangea? Because we have several different species.
You know, I heard the name, but I can't remember it. It's one of the ones with the white blossoms, and they're really full right now.
Okay, so those are Annabelle hydrangeas. And they can be divided, so they expand kind of like they colonize out as they grow. They get a little bit bigger, and they're also are smooth hydrangeas. They're called smooth leaf hydrangeas. So you can if you can just pry apart the root ball when you dig it up, and you can do that now. If they're blooming beautifully, I would probably wait till they're done blooming, maybe wait until the weather is cooler and it's less stressful for transplanting. But if you have to do it now, you can. And again, just when you get that root ball, just start, get your fingers in there and just gently pry that plant apart, kind of see what falls apart. and then you'll have your divisions of that plant.
Julie, I'm looking at a text that we get from time to time here in the show, looking for advice on how to get rid of a lot of white clover in my yard.
Where's John?
Yeah.
So white clover is actually beneficial. It is beneficial particularly for pollinators. So don't give it a total thumbs down. But if you do want to get rid of it, it's going to require either digging it out or applying a broadleaf herbicide. So you really have those two choices. And some people will try to smother it by putting cardboard over it or solarizing it or occulating it. And those are options too. But, for the fastest result is start digging it out at that point. And then replace that right away, replace that area with a seed, a grass seed that's appropriate for the conditions that you have. We have an excellent webpage on white Dutch clover, and you can read more about the plant there, the benefits, as well as how to manage it either culturally or also with a chemical. So that is at extension.umn.edu at Yard and Garden, and you want to look for weeds in home landscape or home gardens and lawns.
Okay. Critic question here, Julie. How do I get rid of ant hills in my yard in the grass? Mostly someone said boiling water, but won't that kill everything that grows?
No, the boiling water, it won't kill everything that grows. It will, but that's one approach, a non-chemical approach to managing ant hills, and that is to pour boiling water in the evening when the ants have gone back into their ant hills on that ant hill, and that basically you're cooking the ants at that point. But you can also look at anthills and say, why are the anthills here? You know, what's going on? So you may have very sandy soil, and you might want to try amending that soil with a compost that helps to add organic matter into that sandy soil. It also helps it to hold moisture better, and that kind of works really well overall for the health of your lawn. If you have anthills in pavers or in between cracks in cement, then you'd want to use some kind of an insecticide to treat that area for those anthills. You can try the boiling water too.
Yeah, okay. Listener wants to know, Julie, and then we're going to take a break for weather. What's happening to the morning glories this year? Mine aren't growing like they should be.
Boy, I wish that were the case at my house. I'm trying to get rid of them.
Oh.
Once you have morning glories, you always do. I don't know. It could be that your site has become shadier. Maybe a plant, a tree has grown really well the last couple of years and is starting to shade that area. Maybe your neighbor's plants are shading that area. I would look around for the conditions, because normally morning glories are pretty darn easy to get to bloom. It could just be that it's a little bit later blooming. We've seen variation where some plants have really bloomed super early, have come up really early this year, and others that have just been kind of taking their time. So I would just be patient with it, but also look around to see, do I have enough sun for this plant?
All right. Tell you what, let's do this. Let's take a break, find out what that smoky forecast calls for. We'll come back, have about another half hour of our Smart Garden Show, brought to us by Great Garage Floors. Stay with us. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on this Saturday, the 12th of July. Danny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, answering those lawn and garden questions. Julie, we always want to know what the heck is going on, and there always is, at the Arboretum, and if the abiders are playing. But let's, first things first, what's happening at the Arb?
Well, we have some exciting new events happening. One is called Pizza on the Farm. It's going to be Tuesday nights for five Tuesdays, so from July 29th through the end of August 26th. And we are going to have chef-crafted pizzas, also live music, and also just a chance to get together and hang out at this beautiful farm out on the Great Lawns and really just enjoy the environment. So people need to order their pizzas ahead of time, and there's a link to this on our page at arb.umn.edu. And you can order that pizza for whatever time you want within the time frame that they're available, and it will be ready when you get there. So very cool. We are playing for it. Carl and I, we're doing a duo, maybe a trio on the 29th. We're kind of kicking it off. And then we've got some friends who are playing in the following nights as well. So it should be a lot of fun. And we're really encouraged about this and really excited about it because pizza has been a huge hit. We have pizza ovens now at the Arboretum at the farm, and people are making, oh my gosh, they smell so good. Just like amazing.
You can't go wrong with pizza.
That's right.
Oh, that's right. Now, where, Julie, can people find out, because they missed all this info, where can they find more information?
They can find more at arb.umn.edu under events.
Very good. Outstanding. We'll remind folks of that before you take your leave today, too.
Sounds good.
Looking at a text, my cucumber plants have developed brownish spots on leaves. It looks like either downy mildew or angular leaf spot. Texter says, I removed the affected leaves, sprayed with neem oil, and so far that has worked. But long term, I'm guessing these plants and fruit will not do well. Is that correct?
I cannot predict. So it could be that we've, from the excessive rain that we've had, that that has caused some of that browning on the leaves. Sounds to me like you have more experience with cucumbers than I do. So I would say keep watching them, keep checking them out. You may end up wanting to plant some other cucumbers to have, you know, at a different location on your site, just in case these don't make it.
Okay. Our friend Catherine and Blaine is calling us this morning to find out some information from you. Hi, Catherine. What's your question for Julie?
Thank you, Julie. Julie, I have a problem with moss on the north side of my house. How do I get rid of that, and what can I plant there instead?
So moss is a sign of, obviously, north side of the house, not a lot of sun, usually pretty moist conditions. And you can remove it manually, and then you want to also amend that soil. So usually moss is growing on compacted soil, and so you want to loosen that soil up. You can plan to core aerate it in the fall, or you can just manually do that now. What I would look at planting would be a ground cover. It depends on the traffic of that area, too. If you have to access that space with, say, your wheelbarrow or your lawnmower to get to the backyard, front yard, you might want to consider just mulching that space and making an informal path to get your create your access. And then maybe planting along on the outside of that pathway with some shade-loving perennials, you know, good old hostas. There's also great coral bells that work as well. Heuchera, they're called. And then also look at some, maybe a ground cover like Pachysandra, some of those plants that can kind of fill in that space, but keeping that access open so that you can walk there. Sometimes we try to grow things in areas that really are not, you know, very conducive to growing plants. And that might just be that part of your property. It's become compacted down.
All right. Looking at a text, Julie, it says, I have a tomato plant and I've already had 8 tomatoes around 2 inches diameter. They were good, but now the entire plant has yellowed leaves. Does that mean it's done?
Well, we have a number of issues with tomatoes that are pretty common, things like late blight, early blight, and septoria leaf spot. We have an excellent page on diseases and also disorders of tomatoes that you can take a look at on our webpage. It's under our plant disease section on Yard and Garden. But also, sometimes these plants are more susceptible to these conditions. And there's a number of different ways these conditions will show themselves. Yellowing leaves, spots on leaves, dropping leaves. These conditions also, or these diseases, will transfer year to year from the soil. The organisms, the pathogens, will reside in the soil over the winter. They also will be on things like your cages, your pots, your stakes, your ties. If you keep reusing those same items year after year and keep replanting in the same soil year after year, you're going to want to choose tomatoes that are resilient or resistant to those diseases, to those pathogens. And you can find that information on the web. Cornell has an excellent webpage about that. I think we have some recommendations as well on our tomato plants. Clean all of the structures. Clean your pots if you're growing in containers. Clean your cages. Clean your tools if you go and work from plant to plant. You want to minimize spreading those pathogens from plant to plant as well. But choosing the resistant variety is your first task.
Okay. This listener wants to fertilize their tomatoes, peppers, and beans. Question is, can I dissolve pellet 10-10-10 to do this?
I would go with, because these are annuals, I'd go with a liquid fertilizer because it's more readily available and more quickly available to those plants versus dissolving a pellet. There is some granular fertilizer that comes. That's like a 10-10-10. I would look also for a vegetable fertilizer, not just your, you know, run-of-the-mill all-purpose. And I would look to dissolve that in the water. The liquid dissolves really quickly. The granular, sometimes you get a bunch of residue at the bottom of your container that you're using, whether it's a bucket or if it's a watering can. And that will be more readily available to the plant. So liquid might be the way to go.
This listener wants to know, what insect may be eating the cauliflower? And what do you do about it?
It could be a couple of things. I wish Laura was on for this one. She's an expert in insects on annuals. Cabbage moth, the caterpillar for cabbage moth. Also, let's see, what's the other one that's going around? But it could be a number of different beetles. It could be also, it's usually a caterpillar of sorts. You can pick them off. Look on the underside of the leaf and look for any eggs, remove those. And also if you see the insect, of course, pick that off and dispose of that insect. You can spray with, you could spray with BT, Bacillus thuringiensis. That's specific for the brassicas and for the insects that feed on them. And you can purchase that at your local garden center.
Okay. This, Julie, listener lost most of their roses over the winter, but the ones that they have growing are only getting leaves, five leaves, no flowers. Need help.
Yeah, it was a stressful year for plants. We had very little snow cover, so very little insulation on our soil and around the roots of the plants. And then also we had really extreme frost depths this year, much deeper than in past recent years. So that's been really tough on plants, and a lot of people have reported losing long-lived plants in their yard. I've lost a couple of them. Everybody I talked to has said, oh, yeah, I lost such and such. I've had it for 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and it bit the dust this winter. So it could also be the type of rose that you have. It may be that it's just not as hardy for Minnesota, and you want to always choose a rose plant that's going to be really, really resilient and be able to you know, be really hardy against Minnesota winters. And in the future, you may just plan on covering those, on protecting those roses throughout the winter. And you can do that by putting a screen of fencing around them, stuffing leaves in there, or filling that with straw, for example, to protect those crowns and those kind of start off with more green tissue than just leaving them bare to the elements.
Okay. Here's another troubled text. We have always had lots of bee balm, but this year they're all gone except for one stem of a bee balm. Why is that?
Yeah, could be the same reason.
Yeah.
It's amazing the reports in that people have said, oh, yeah, I lost a lilac shrub. Lilacs live to be 100 years old. I mean, they are really tough plants, and people have lost really, you know, reliable plants, and it was just a very, very difficult winter.
Listener has a text, says, regarding weed control, after a very thorough weeding, I put down some preen with or without cultivating, and that seems to be effective. I do this in my flower and vegetable garden. Your thoughts, is this okay for vegetables?
Yeah, as long as it's labeled for vegetable gardens, there's a lot of different kinds of preen out there. And preen is a pre-emergent, so you're basically preventing annual seeds from germinating. You have to be careful if you planted seeds in your vegetable garden. You don't want to put preen down because that would prevent them from germinating. So, but it does work, you know, really nicely for controlling things like, you know, crabgrass seed and barnyard and, you know, what have you, different sedges and things. So, I think it's fine to do that. Just a word of caution that you want to read the label and apply it appropriately and exactly according to the instructions. And do take into consideration, again, if you've seeded an area, say you've put in carrots for a late season crop, you do not want to put any kind of preen or pre-emergent around those seeds.
Makes sense. Julie, hang on, please. We'll take this quick break. Be back on the other side with more of our Smart Garden Show, brought to us by Great Garage Floors. If you are just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M answering those lawn and garden questions this very morning at 651-461-9226. Always need to ask you, I always want to ask you, when are the Abiders playing next?
We are playing this afternoon, actually. Ooh. Out at Buckhorn Days in Long Lake, Minnesota. And we start about 2:15 and play for about an hour and a half. There's a whole lineup of great, great musicians who are playing before us and after us. They have, oh my gosh, there's so many events. There's a water skiing show. There is all-star wrestling at 5 o'clock. I mean, who knew?
You're not part of that, are you?
No. And then there's a lot of games and stuff for kids, certainly a beer garden, all of those great events that make summer so awesome in Minnesota. So I hope that if you come, please come up and introduce yourself. It's always fun to meet listeners.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll see your smiling faces.
And maybe during the breaks, during the gig, you can answer some lawn and garden questions.
Yeah. No,
you've done that before.
I have done that before. This is not Buckthorn Days. This is Buckhorn Days.
Buckhorn. So, different.
Just to clarify.
Totally different. All right. Well, that'll be – you got a fun day for that, too,
it looks yeah, like. It sounds good.
Right. Texter says this, Julie, greetings. What do cracks in the trunk of maple trees mean?
So cracks in tree trunks, and particularly maple, are called frost cracks, and they are due to winter conditions where it's when a maple is young, it has relatively thin bark, and it can be heated up by the winter sunlight, believe it or not. It gets warm on that side of the tree trunk, and then when the temperatures drop, when the sun goes down, that those cells can... that wood can split and crack, and you create a frost crack. Most frost cracks, if they're not too deep, can kind of heal themselves over. But you can protect your maple trees and other thin bark trees like plums and cherries and apples by putting in some corrugated tree guards or white tree guards. That white color reflects the light and doesn't allow the cells of that plant to really warm up from that sunlight. So tree guards are great. They also help prevent some animal browsing on that trunk too. And that's a good way to protect your plants. I would just really baby those trees, make sure they're getting enough water, feel that 6 to 9 inches soil down at the root zone, make sure it's getting, you know, water's getting down into that space. And then also just protect those trees in the winter going forward.
Just trying to think, wasn't there some other information you wanted to impart to our listeners this morning?
I do. We have an awesome checklist process here that Laura has been putting out. And we have our July garden checklist. The checklists come out at the first week of each month. And they give tips for the coming month for gardeners in Minnesota. So there's always a mystery of the month where you can kind of look at the picture and try to figure out what's going on there. And then the answer's at the end. But Laura covers things like pests and diseases, trees and shrubs, flowers and other garden plants, house plants. And John throws in information about lawns. And then I add in my take on a couple of things too. And there's also other tasks too. So for example, right now, Laura's recommending to start direct sowing fall vegetables where you've had early season vegetables that maybe have bolted, in other words, flowered. So like pak choy or kale or something. You might want to start seed some cabbage, carrots, beets, or broccoli. Those all work great as fall crops. So this is a really handy way to kind of get a summation of things to think about. And again, we talked about the Japanese beetle earlier, and there's a link there and some information about the winsome fly on Japanese beetles in your yards and gardens.
Very good. Thanks, Julie. I know we're almost out of time, and I want to get as many text answers as
Great.
We can. Yeah, I think this is an important one. You and your colleagues have talked about this before, mulching around trees. A texter says, when I put mulch down, do I go all the way up to the trunk of the tree, or do we leave some space between the mulch and the trunk?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that question. The best practice is to pull that mulch away from the trunk so that you can see the flare of the tree, the root flare. That's the base of the tree that flares out as the tree roots go into the soil. And you want to pull that mulch away from that. You don't want to pile it up along the trunk. It holds in moisture. It can be a place where critters can reside. You might have some insects. But worse than that is as that mulch breaks down, it creates actually a soil, and that tree may start to circle its roots and creating what are called stem girdling roots. It may also put out roots above the root flare too, if it's buried like that. Some trees will do that. And so, yes, pull that mulch away. You should pull it away so you can see that root flare and see a little bit of soil. You have to weed in there a little bit. That's fine. It's not a big deal. But just pull it away from the trunk. So I'm so glad that you asked that question.
Very good. We've had questions before about rust in the in our lawns. A question from a listener is, will that rust go away on its own over time, or is a fungicide necessary? They said, I had it pretty bad last year, and it's starting to show up again.
So I believe that is due to like over nitrogen application. So you might want to back off on that. We do have a good page on lawn diseases, and you can check out more details that John has written about that as well. But I think it has to do with too much nitrogen. And then maybe you want to back off on your watering too. Rust is a fungus. Fungus grow in damp conditions. It will eventually, you'll mow it off and get rid of it. But yeah, you'd probably want to just check out that webpage and make sure that I'm on cue today with that.
All right. Tester says this, Julie, I have a couple of volunteer trees that I want to remove from my flower bed. They range from the diameter of a pencil to that of a dime. Now, if I am unable to remove the roots, do I need to put something on their small trunks to eliminate the possibility of them growing back?
Yeah, so you could take an herbicide that is usually labeled a brush killer, usually contains triclopyr and maybe some glyphosate, and you want to just dab it on the cut trunk of those bigger trees. You should try to dig them completely out because those roots are going to be in the soil for a while, and they could impede your planting. They could create mushrooms growing off of that degrading root. So if you can dig it out, that would be the best thing to do. But you can do that. Little tiny seedling trees, you can just pick them off. Once you've taken off those top couple leaves, they shouldn't come back. So like if they're just starting to emerge.
Okay. Oh, we have so many texts and so little time. Question about aphids in our ash trees, says a texter.
Oh, yeah.
We have hundreds of sticky spots on our siding and all our deck and patio surfaces. We see little white droppings on everything. It's a sticky mess. Should we treat our mature ash trees with an herbicide for this problem? We treated our ash trees for emerald ash borer last year, so that treatment isn't due yet. Sorry if you discussed this already. Well, we didn't, but we have talked in the past about that sticky stuff.
Yeah, that's called honeydew, and it's an excrement that the sucking insects will put out after they've been feeding on a tree. So it's a sugary, sweet, sticky stuff. It's what you see all over your deck and patio and sometimes your cars. I've heard people say their dogs have it on them. There isn't much to do about it. You can clean that off. But as far as the aphids go, I would contact a certified arborist about that because there may be a systemic that the tree can be treated with that will, as the insect takes up the sap from the tree or the liquid from this tree, they'll take up that pesticide as well. But lots of times it's kind of like, it's just the population is high this year and not much to do, like personally. Like I couldn't go out and treat my birch tree. I would have to just kind of keep my cars away from it, keep myself away from it, that kind of stuff. But
yeah.
But contact a certified arborist. It's always a really great way to go on mature trees.
Julie, we have less than a minute to go. Let's recap of where the abiders are going to be today, talk about the arboretum, and then we'll say goodbye.
Okay. We're going to be at Long Lake at Buckhorn Days. We start playing about 2:30, but the event goes on all day, so be sure to get out there early and enjoy all the great stuff they have going on. It's Long Lake, Minnesota. It's just out on west on Highway 12. Also, I just want to point out that if you did not get your question answered today, be sure to visit Yard and Garden at extension.umn.edu. We also have Ask a Master Gardener, and you can type in your question, email it to them along with some images if you didn't get your question answered today. So,
excellent.
And go to the Arboretum. Get
yes,
your ticket,
definitely.
arb.umn.edu. I hope I see people on July 29th at the first Pizza on the Farm.
Ooh, does that sound good to me? Julie, thanks so much. Always fun.
Thanks, Denny.
Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.